Welcome to the 3PL Summit. Today, we are starting things off right with our keynote, and we are joined by the one and only Doug Wagner, the CEO of Echo Global Logistics. Thank you so much for joining us today, Doug.
Well, thanks for having me, Mary. Good to be here.
I am very excited about today, mostly because as the 3PL expert, it's kind of my day. You know, it's my day to share the world about all things 3PL, and what a better way to kick it off. So before we get too far into things, Doug, why don't you give us some background and kind of how you ended up at Echo?
Well, I've been doing transportation for a long time. I started right out of college. I went into a management training program with an LTL carrier. And I really spent the first half of my career in LTL trucking and worked in a variety of capacities, sales, operations, marketing, IT, engineering, and spent a lot of time actually at Yellow Freight in their corporate office. From there, I got into general management. I was president of Daylight Transport for about 4 years. I went to USF Corporation, worked in the corporate office in the holding company, where we had at the time 8 operating companies, 6 LTL carriers, a freight forwarder, and a logistics company. Worked with the presidents of those 8 companies. And eventually, we got sold back to Yellow. So I had a second stint at Yellow. And I was running USF Bestway at the time, which was one of the LTL operating companies of USF. After that, I started a company called SelectTrans, which was a cloud-based TMS aimed at shippers and brokers, and did that for about 1.5 years. And then I met the 2 founders of Echo, who are basically tech startup guys. They've been serial entrepreneurs, started a number of companies, including Groupon and others. They've got a venture capital fund also. And they didn't know much about transportation, but they thought it was a space where technology could make a difference. So in a sense, I sort of say that when we talk about disruptive technology brokerage businesses, you know, Echo is really the original gangster, started back in 2005. So I met Brad and Eric. They brought me in, you know, sort of because of my transportation background and my tech background. They bought my company. We incorporated some of the IT that I had created, you know, into the Echo platform. And I really took over in the first year, which was the end of 2006. Had about 70 employees, about $30 million of revenue. So we were truly a startup company in those days. We've grown the company ever since. We've made 22 acquisitions. Frankly, raised very little capital. So we did most of our growth just off of our internally generated cash flow. Our original VC investment was about $7 million back in 2007. The next capital infusion was our IPO in 2009. And we raised capital once more in 2015 when we bought Command Transportation. And so it's been a good run. We've had a lot of success. You know, in our peak performance in 22, we had revenue of about $4.4 billion. So been a good run.
Needless to say, it's quite a jump from the startup that you started at.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, a startup company has its own culture and sort of metaphysical being. And as you grow up, you have to create a, you know, a necessarily more bureaucratic organization. You got to put controls in place. So there's a fine balance trying to keep that entrepreneurial spirit, and yet at the same time, you know, grow up into a real company.
Yeah, there's that fine line between like, oh yeah, that one dude is kind of the closest thing to HR, and now you actually have an HR department, but don't worry, we're still fun guys.
Well, I actually have a funny story about that. The 2 founders, you know, they're true cowboys when it comes to startups. You know, it's keep the cost low, you know, make EBITDA, you know, pump the valuation, right? So in addition to not taking very much salary, you know, we skimped on a lot of things like HR. And I remember we got to a point where we had about 400 employees, and I was, you know, the founders, they would kind of show up one day a week and they were on the board, but they were off starting other companies. So I was really running it on my own, but sort of like I had 2 bosses at that time. And so I said, I'm going to hire an HR person, because at that point we had outsourced HR to a PPO. And He said, well, why are you going to do that? That's just expense. And I said, because we have 400 people. This is a business that runs on people, and HR is all about people. So that's what we're going to do. And so we had a little argument about that, but I won.
All right. So moving away from the startup, we just hired HR because we're an adult company now, where it's no secret that we're in a down market. I mean, you guys have probably felt the pressures as well. Everyone's shining up those crystal balls to see what's kind of coming in the future. What indicators are you looking for that could signal that, you know, this market has turned and there is a light at the tunnel and we can expect to, you know, maybe undo the belt loop a notch so that way we can all take a sigh of relief and move forward to something that resembles much better margins?
Sure. Well, you know, this industry is a great barometer for the economy. And, you know, I think a lot of professional investors actually look to our industry to sort of signal where things are going. You know, I think that we reached the bottom of the trough in the middle of 2023. You know, it's no secret that at post-COVID with disrupted supply chains, we saw a huge boom of demand, you know, because of the disrupted supply chains. We also saw a lot of capacity come into the market. I was looking at one of the sonar charts recently that showed the number of trucking company authorities. And if you look at that graph, there was a huge spike in authority that was added back in the post-COVID early days when the market was really on fire. And it spikes way off of the trend line. And so that was new carriers with new authority. And at the same time, you know, talking to a lot of small carriers, they were adding drivers. So they were making so much money because the rates were so good that they were adding capacity. And then when we got into the end of 22 and early 23 and the demand sort of fell out and we also had excess capacity, you know, the rates have come tumbling down. And we've finally seen that stabilize, I would say sort of mid to the end of Q3, we sort of saw the rates stabilize. I would say demand's pretty stable and we see capacity leaving the market. So both in terms of the number of authorities that are on file are starting to decline. Anecdotally, we hear, you know, about trucking companies that are closing. We hear about, you know, small companies that are turning in the keys to their trucks. Also talking to insurance brokerages, the number of trucks is declining. So not only the number of carriers, but the number of trucks. So I think those are all good indicators for us to see that, you know, the excess supply of capacity is coming back in line with demand. And while demand has been fairly flat, you know, we expect it to pick up. We, in January, had about 10% volume growth at Echo. I think that's a pretty good number. It's sequentially up over the last 2 or 3 months. We've seen it slowly creeping up. So that's a good indicator on the demand side. And, you know, supply keeps coming out. We could be into a balanced market, which would stabilize the pricing. And potentially in the second half of 24, we think we could see tighter market conditions. And, you know, that would start to put pressure on prices and create some spot freight, which we haven't had for a long time.
I think having any sort of growth with, especially in demand and volume in January, even in a normal year, is quite an accomplishment, because January and February are historically not the best, strongest freight months. They're kind of dark and dreary, unless you're like that one random sector that's like your busy time, but it's not usually enough to like flip the whole market. But I think that's an insane accomplishment that you guys have been able to have that growth and that success in January, which is arguably in a down market. So well done, Echo. Yes, with no spot freight, because honestly, we need it back. We need spot freight back.
Yep, we do.
So I think that kind of is in line with a lot of what other people are thinking, where maybe the second half of the year, I have gone so far as to say, come the 4th of July, it's going to flip like a switch. I could be wrong, but I had to pick a day. I had to pick something just to look forward to, you know?
Well, I think you're right on it, because, you know, I have the same perception. January and February are the worst months. You know, when we were a public company and people wanted to know how Q1 was looking, I would always tell them that I can't tell you till about the second week of March, because if we don't see a seasonal uptick by the third week of March, that's what we're going to need to salvage the first quarter. And so the end of March makes the first quarter. And then after that, it starts to build seasonally. And I think the election has an impact this year, because, you know, with the Fed trying to decide what they're going to do with interest rates, I mean, the politicians definitely want a strong economy going into the election, and they want consumers feeling good. So hopefully those stars will align, and we'll start to see some macroeconomic improvement that helps the freight industry.
Looking at kind of the rebound that's impending, what kind of markets are you thinking, or not necessarily markets, what type of segments within the industry do you think are a little bit more bulletproof? Like, which ones do you think are going to maybe rebound faster or haven't necessarily taken as hard of a hit as like some of the others?
Well, certainly aerospace and military subcontractors are doing well right now. I don't know if that's a good thing, but there's a trickle effect and a multiplier effect of those dollars that are spent.
I would definitely say that they're going to have a pretty good year.
You know, I would say that I'm concerned about the consumer, because it's such a big part of the economy. And, you know, in particular, credit card debt and the high interest rates on credit card, mortgage rates, people that have variable rate loans. So I think there's going to be some extreme pressure on a segment of the consumer's spending. Now, so far, they're not letting us down, right? They're continuing to spend money. They're continuing to not save money. And that helps the economy. But at some point, I wonder if there's a breaking point. On the flip side, you know, it seems to us like, you know, consumables, you know, in the brokerage industry, we ship a lot of beer and water, the two important commodities, food, you know, those are pretty steady. The industrial segment for us seems to be picking up and improving a little bit. So, you know, everything but the consumer feels pretty good. And so far, the consumer's not letting us down.
You know, you can always count on those consumers to, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, they'll stretch a dollar, you know, just put it on the card and worry about it later. It's fine. Just the consumer's got us.
Well, and they always drink water and beer.
Yeah. I mean, you always know when times are tough, when like the cheaper light beers start selling a lot more. That's always a pretty good indicator that we've made the swap to that cheaper beer. Because we're not going to stop buying beer. We're just going to buy the slightly cheaper. So I guess when you look ahead to the rest of the year, what are some of those areas? Obviously, we've kind of already, you know, thrown aerospace and defense under the bus there. But what kind of segments are you expecting to see that rapid growth and kind of have that big opportunity to, you know, catapult business and increase volumes?
Well, I think the consumer will make a difference ultimately. I'm nervous about them, but at the same time, there's a psychological component, right? That when people feel better, you know, they're more optimistic, they're more willing to spend money. And, you know, I'm not sure what the election dynamics are going to do that state of mind. Probably some people will feel better and some people will feel worse depending on the outcome. So, you know, maybe those will nullify each other. I do think that, you know, interest rates coming down will eventually create a slight amount of euphoria that will get people feeling better about the economy. And face it, you know, unemployment is very low right now. Employment is high. So a lot of statistics that we look at to sort of measure the economy are actually in very favorable places. So, you know, I think people are sort of tired of being in a freight recession. I think consumers are tired of all the uncertainty and the political infighting that they witness, and people are sort of ready to move on. So I put a lot of faith in the sort of the human psychology that, you know, it's going to end this cycle eventually because there will be enough positive indicators.
I mean, that is such a crucial point, because you said that, like, consumers will always vote with their wallets. So if they if they want something, if they see something that they like, you will see them spend accordingly. If they start seeing something that they don't like, well, you can see where the money's not going. Like, no matter what industry or what segment you're in, as long as you just follow that money, you'll know exactly what is going on and what people are thinking for the most part. Okay, so you kind of touched on it a little bit and you said that we're looking for a strong second half of 2024. So do you think there are any external factors, whether it's, you know, major weather events, the continued escalation of some of those geopolitical events that we're seeing, regulations? Because, you know, we do have some of those AI regulations and other things that could throw a wrench in some supply chains. Do you think that anything will come along that will kind of destabilize the upward trend that we seem to be on?
Well, let's just start with weather. For those that have been in the industry for a little bit, we'll think back to the fourth quarter of 2017, and we had a hurricane in Houston, and then we had a second hurricane in Florida. And the hurricane in Houston completely disrupted the national transportation network. You know, trucks could not get into South Texas, trucks could not get out of South Texas. And it disrupted the balance of asset-based carriers. And it literally took months for that to right itself. And on top of that, in January of, I think it was 18, we had the ELD mandate, which further constrained capacity. And so those two events right there created a very tight market in the first half of 2018 that was sort of the last bull market prior to the post-COVID market, right? So that's a little hurricane here or there can make a big difference. The geopolitical, there's a lot of bad things going on in the world right now. And, when and where it's going to erupt in something that's significant is hard to predict. But I think we have to sleep with one eye open because that could be a factor in our economy. The other thing that I would say is that I think the sensitivity of the market is pretty high. You know, and I'll say that a different way. The distance between a loose market and a tight market is not that far. So a couple percentage points of improvement in demand or a couple percentage points of reduction in supply can almost instantaneously create a tight market overnight. And at that moment, we all know what happens, right? Prices go up. It's harder to find a truck. There's suddenly a bunch of spot freight. Service becomes an issue for shippers. So that's what's so interesting about this industry and all the uncertainty is all those factors that you mentioned could be a catalyst for that sort of a market flip.
The 2018 flashbacks that I have of the hurricane and the ELD mandate, because at that time I was working in a sector that, you know, it wasn't sure if it was going to be an exception for that. So, and, you know, we had trucks all over the place. So it was like, can you move? Can you not move? Because everyone was like, well, I think we're going to be an exception, but we don't know. So we're just not going to haul anything until we know. And I'm like, that is not the answer that we need. Not the answer that we're looking for at all.
Were you on the shipper side of the desk?
Yeah, we were. I worked for a 3PL that was like doing managed trans for a shipper. So kind of yes, but I was like, this is great. Love this for us. No problem whatsoever.
You know, there's another factor that I think is interesting, and that's the nearshoring of manufacturing in Mexico. We're seeing it. We're actually expanding our Mexican operations. I know others are as well. But, you know, there's been a move to pull manufacturing out of the Pacific Rim and put it into Mexico. So I think that's sort of an exciting opportunity. Doesn't necessarily create more freight. It just creates freight moving in different lanes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of just shifting a lot of networks, which hopefully shippers have already prepared themselves for. But that being said, we are running out of time today. So if anyone has any other questions or, you know, maybe wants to borrow that crystal ball of yours to stare into, where can they find you outside of the summit?
I'll be at my office in Chicago, dialed in.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thanks, Murray.
Stay tuned for the rest of the 3PL summit. We have a bunch of amazing content coming your way.